Hello, everyone, and welcome to the UCL JLAB's new initiative, In Conversation With, where we have the pleasure of interviewing successful legal professionals. Today, we have the honour of speaking with a very successful leading legal professional, Mr. Zaki Sarraf, who's kindly offered to speak to us today. My name is Maj Mansour. I am the engagement officer and first year representative at Junior Lawyers Against Poverty.
Hi, I'm Sahana, and I'm the president of the JLAB chapter at UCL.
Without any further ado, I would like to get started with the interview, if that's okay with you, Zaki.
Yep, sounds good.
Perfect. So I think just to introduce yourself in general, could you please take us through your academic journey and your legal career so far and how you eventually ended up working within the United Nations Refugee Agency?
Yeah, sure. So I guess just to preface this of saying that I didn't know I was going to study law when I was growing up. I didn't really have any interest in pursuing a career in law. When I was doing my A-levels, I was interested in philosophy. So I thought that may be a reasonable option for me to go down as a degree option. And I just studied law because my cousin basically went to SOAS to study law. So I just thought, why not? Let me just see how that goes. Seemed to be the more the safer option. And so I started my degree in 2015. And even in my degree, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do, like what route I was going to take, whether I'd stay in the law or not. And then my third year, I volunteered as a paralegal with Descartes Solicitors. And they are mainly an immigration firm doing private immigration work. But even then, I just didn't feel that private immigration was for me. It seemed too procedural and wasn't as engaging as I'd have liked. So I didn't really know what I was going to do in my third year, essentially. And so I saw my friends doing VAC schemes in these different corporate places, and I was a bit stuck, unsure what I was going to do. I knew corporate law wasn't for me. Never wasn't really not interested in that kind of work. And so I'd say a few weeks before my graduation, I saw an opportunity to be a fundraiser for Sanctuary Scholarships in the university, which is a scholarship for refugees and asylum seekers. So their fees are waived so they can study at SOAS, undergrad and postgrad level. And so I thought it'd be a good opportunity, and I needed some money as well. So I did that for around 2-3 weeks for the whole campaign. And in the campaign, there was the software where we can toggle who we spoke to, which alumni we spoke to based on what they studied. So I had I was interested in human rights. I didn't know it was a feasible career option, just because a lot of people told me when I was growing up that you can't get into human rights off university. You kind of have to have an established career, and then you can move into human rights later on in life when you decide to be a bit more philanthropic. And so I decided to give people who studied the LLM in human rights a call, just so I can see what they ended up doing after their postgrad degree. And so what I did was I got up a document, and whenever they explained the different organizations they went to, the different human rights organizations, I took a note of them. And then the organizations that kind of stood out to me, I would research them, see if there's any internship opportunities, any voluntary opportunities. And that's how I came across UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency. So I saw that, I researched a lot into them, very amazing organization. And so as I was looking for internships, there was only vacancies for the Goodwill Ambassador team, which is essentially the team that looks after the celebrities that support UNHCR. So I didn't have any experience in managing celebrities or dealing with that kind of stuff, but I just thought might as well. No harm in it. So I did an application, somehow got shortlisted, and I interviewed, and they said that although I don't have the experience, since I've never managed any celebrities, they thought my application would be good for the legal team. So I was like, yeah, why not? So I interviewed for the legal team, the legal protection team, and they liked me. They took me on for a internship, so a 6-month internship in August 2018. So I graduated in July. The next month, I started with them as a legal protection intern. Amazing experience, very good for my level of just being a fresh graduate. And so 6 months there, and then after that, I thought that I needed some work abroad, just given the work with refugees and asylum seekers. I thought we're quite far removed in the UK, so I wanted some field work and some groundwork. And I know that human rights organizations really value individuals who've done that field work and who have that experience as well. So I went to Egypt and I volunteered in a NGO representing asylum seekers in their refugee status determination procedures. Great experience. I was there for 6 months as well. And from there, I came back to the UK in October 2019. And I started at Duncan Lewis as first a caseworker, then a senior caseworker in their public law and human rights team. So representing claimants against the UK government in judicial review matters, civil claims, also great experience. And then I left Duncan Lewis to rejoin the legal protection team at UNHCR, which is where I first entered my legal career. And so I was doing a combination of policy advisory work, some casework matters, and general refugee advocacy work. And so, yeah, quite a long-winded answer, but I think that's my journey so far.
I think that's such an interesting legal path that you've taken, and it's definitely not one that we see very often. And you mentioned, you know, that you worked as a paralegal at Daycastle and then as a senior caseworker at Duncan Lewis. So how does this kind of workplace environment and the type of work differ at a law firm in comparison to working at NGOs and the UN? Could you shed some light on that?
Sure. So I think one thing to keep in mind that law firms like Descartes, like Duncan Lewis, they're private businesses, right? And so a large emphasis on just the general work environment is on the billing side of things and also the chargeable hours, which is important for the running of the firm, because especially legal aid work, which is what Duncan Lewis mainly focus on, it's very difficult to stay afloat, just given the legal aid cuts and given the environment now. And so there needs to be quite a strict approach on all their caseworkers and fee earners to kind of get in their chargeable hours, to make sure they bill their files, which of course is completely different to NGOs, charity world, the UN, where it's not a business in the same sense of where you don't need to exactly bill your files, as in it's not a business where one of the main wants for management is profit. That's completely not what the operation is like, and it's not how they how they process cases. But at the same time, NGOs, they have their funding, and so there's still certain admin tasks that need to be. So for example, taking a note of all your casework matters, the same thing in a firm and in NGOs, even in the UN, just making sure that you have everything there. But the work itself, depending on where it is, so the UN was more advocacy and policy rather than litigation. Whereas in Duncan Lewis, for example, it's more litigation, less policy. So it has, they both have their pros and cons. I think both the UN world of diplomacy and the frontline litigation that different law firms, they go hand in hand, especially in the human rights public law sphere. So I think they're both very important.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that answer. It was very interesting to see the difference, because I think as law students, sometimes we get only really shown the avenue, which is straight to law firms. So it's interesting to see all the other opportunities available. So also, we know that you have significant experience as a legal writer. So you're a reporter for The Justice Gap and an editor for Human Rights Pulse. So we were just wondering, how do your publications contribute to your career? And would you recommend that law students explore legal writing and journalism as they move forward with their careers?
Yeah, 100%. It's one of the things that I wish I did earlier. And I only really started after I left Duncan Lewis a year ago, maybe. Less than a year ago. It's something that's really important because no matter what kind of law you want to get into and what routes you want to take, whether it's a solicitor or a barrister or in the NGO, UN world, you have to have strong drafting skills. I think there's no two ways about it. You need to be able to write very well and very clearly and to different audiences. So I think working in journalism and working in these different organizations, especially when you're at uni, is perfect. I think it's something that looks very good. It builds your brand. It looks good to employers. If, for example, you've written quite a few articles on any human rights issues, for example, on the refugee issues, and you apply for the UN Refugee Agency, you'd always stand out compared to the competitors and other candidates, because you've shown commitment, you've shown a real interest in the kind of work that they are in. And I think that's one of the main things that as university students you should keep in mind. And how can you show that you are committed to whatever organization you're applying for, but also write about stuff you're interested in? As in, I wouldn't have any motivation to write about property law or anything in that regard, but I am very interested in human rights issues. And so writing on, for example, Shemima Begum's case, I really enjoyed it. And I think when you really enjoy writing about a specific topic, you can spend a lot of time researching, kind of putting in a really stellar piece, just so it's out there for employers to read. But also different organizations like Human Rights Pulse, they are perfect for university students. I mean, you can write about any issue pertaining to human rights, of course, and you would have a team of editors making sure that the article is ready to be published, it has strong arguments, it's grammatically all fine, and then you can always get feedback from the editors as well. So I'm not just saying this because I'm an editor with them, but it really is a great platform where you can kind of showcase your drafting abilities, and you can have that when you go to an internship or a job and you're being interviewed and they ask you the inevitable question of why would we choose you over someone else. You have that tangible thing in front of you to say, I wrote about this thing. And I think it's really impressive to have, especially when you're in university, because a lot of people wouldn't.
Yeah, I think it's really extremely commendable that you've written so extensively and that you've decided to pursue your career in human rights, especially, you know, right after leaving university, like you mentioned. And you've also taken on a lot of pro bono cases. And, you know, you said earlier, you've done mentoring roles in for young unaccompanied asylum seekers, and you've also worked in Egypt. So how would you say that your pro bono commitments developed you as a person and a legal professional? And why is it important for students to dedicate time to it? You know, especially given that a lot of students feel as though there's nothing to pro bono work or working within the third sector.
Sure. So I think I'll answer this in two parts. So first, when you're starting your career, you kind of need it for experience, as in the human rights sphere where there's hardly any funding to begin with. When you're starting on your career, employers aren't going to be very forthcoming with top end salaries or anything. You need to show that you're committed. And unfortunately, it is a barrier to entry for a lot of people. But having that experience of working wherever in Egypt, or even working in a law center in the UK, or just writing articles, anything like that would set you apart. And it's something where a lot of individuals who graduate university and they are looking for opportunities in the human rights world, but they'd only take paid jobs in the start of their careers. And it's very difficult to kind of break in. But as soon as you break in, then opportunities will kind of flow from there. So that's something that I felt for me personally, as in my internship with the UN, it brought upon this experience in Egypt, which kind of brought the Duncan Lewis, which UN, and it kind of goes from there. But you need to have your foot in the door to begin with. So that's the first point. Second point is, I mean, it is very, very valuable, especially if you volunteer and work in organizations where there are really good initiatives. So for example, the mentoring that I did for the young unaccompanied asylum seeker, it's an organization called Breadwinners, and they assign you a mentee and you volunteer in different farmers markets around London. And it's the asylum seekers' first taste of work experience in the UK. You kind of build their CV with them, you help with their English language skills, and it's a great experience for them and is very rewarding for you as well. So other than just the benefits career-wise, it's also very good work, and you can make a real impact to a lot of people's lives if you pick, of course, good reputable organizations.
Thank you very much for that. And then, as you just mentioned, your work with the UN, we were just interested. So given your previous role now as a legal protection consultant for the UN Refugee Agency, broadly, what does the agency do? Because you understand, obviously, you can't give out too many details. And what challenges did you face on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. So the UN Refugee Agency, it's a specialist UN agency that advises the UK government on issues pertaining to refugees, asylum seekers, statelessness. And the challenges you face, so this is something that is quite inherent with UN agencies, and I think it's a common misconception that people just assume that the UN is a super organization that can do everything, but the UN is only as strong as its member states and its funding. So without the funding, it's nothing, right? It's just a vehicle that is, your agencies are commissioned by governments. So for example, the UN Refugee Agency is commissioned by the UK government here to advise on international law around refugees. So the challenges can be things being swayed and things being dictated somewhat by limited resources, by, for example, resettlement places being quite scarce. Individuals who are resettled, they're a very, very small minority, as in only 1% of the individuals in need of resettlement get resettled. So tiny margins like that. And so that's one of the biggest challenges, where there's only so much that you can do, because other than what member states are going to put up for resettlement places, there's nothing that the UN can do to kind of expand on that. They just advise, they just advocate, and they try to convince governments. But other than that, their hands are quite tied. So I think that's a common misconception that people don't really think about. As in, I guess to a lot of people, the UN is this super organization that it really isn't. And there are issues, but of course it does very good work at the same time as well. So I think that's one of the main issues. Challenges.
Thank you for that insight into the UN. I think, you know, many of our students are keen to go into work with the UN or one of its agencies. And I think even more so probably after this interview. So what do you think is the best way to go about achieving this? I think you touched a little bit on, you know, the specific pathway that you followed. But are there any skills that they value more than others, or is there a way that you can build those skills that for students to make the best application possible, do you think?
I think initially, if you want to have a career in the UN, is you get an internship. As in the internship, one of the criteria is you need to be a recent graduate. So you can be a recent graduate for your undergrad, for your master's. So it is a competitive process, as in getting an internship from graduating in undergrad. It's difficult to do because there's going to be postgrads who are applying, who have years of experience. But if you can get an internship to begin with, that's a great first step, because The UN always want individuals who have specific UN experience, as any organization would, right? As in, if you do your internship, you show that you're competent, you do well, you make a very good impression, you make the contacts, they're much more likely to take you back after you finish your internship. So I think that's number one, get the internship. But to be able to get the internship, I think you need to show commitment to the work of the agency, whether it's UNHCR and a commitment to refugees, whether it's UNICEF, commitment to the rights of children. You need to show how you're committed and to show why you should be picked compared to the hundreds of applicants. And I think some of the things that we touched on, like writing articles, doing pro bono work, I think is very important, or volunteering. So I think getting relevant experience, especially when you're at university, is very, very important. It's all well and good having your university experience for 3 years and then deciding and thinking about your career later on, which I somewhat did. But when you're at university, you can kind of hit the ground running, develop your CV, have articles that you've written. And then when you do graduate, then you can kind of, maybe if you don't get the internship straight away, and you can do something else and get the internship later or after your master's, but having the relevant experience, I think is really important. As in, it's all well and good having a commitment, but the employers would always want to see where you've worked, how relevant that experience was, to see if you're a good fit for the agency and the organization that you'd be working in.
Okay, I'm just going to pause here for a second, Zaki, if that's okay.
Cool.
Thank you for that answer about, you know, what students can do in order to better position themselves to perhaps get an internship or work with the UN as well in the future. So now that you've actually left the UN, do you have any personal and professional goals that, you know, you're seeking to achieve or working on currently?
I think for me, the continuing to stay on international human rights work and litigation kind of work would be where I see myself and what I want to be doing in the future, but especially around the point of access to justice. It's something that I'm very passionate about, the notion of access to justice for everyone. So hopefully in the coming months and years, be working in organizations focusing on international human rights issues that represent the most vulnerable to ensure that they have the access to justice that so many of us in the UK kind of take for granted.
Thank you so much, Zaki. And I think with that, we've come to the last question of our interview and we can wrap up. We really enjoyed your insight today. And I'm sure that all of our listeners will really appreciate everything that you've told them about the UN, the work that you've done so far, and the position that you're in right now in your career. Thank you so much. And we at JLAP really appreciate it as well.
No worries. Thank you for inviting me. And if any UCL students, anyone listening to this, wants to get in touch with me on LinkedIn, you can send me a message. I'd be happy to answer.
Yeah, for sure. We'll include your social media handles as well, if they can reach out to you that way, if you're okay with that too.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Thank you.